Van Batten hails from that great tradition of political playwrights who see an injustice and turn their pen towards that injustice with such a force the paper nearly burns. Van's not only a playwright, she's also a columnist for The Guardian, writing on politics, feminism and internet ethics. With such wide interests, it was difficult to pick just one, but here's Van Batten's masterpiece, the piece of art that means most to her and her work as a writer. Van, what have you chosen as your masterpiece today?
Well, I have many favourites, but one which I've been revisiting again and again over the past few months is Margaret Atwood's novel, The Handmaid's Tale. It is one of my favourites, and I have started turning to it like a trusted friend to give me insight into situations, feminist and political.
So I want to definitely return to that, but first of all, can you tell us a bit about the book itself for anybody who hasn't read it and where you were when you discovered it?
Well, the book was released in the 1980s. Margaret Atwood was primarily known as a poet before she started writing novels, and The Handmaid's Tale was really her big breakthrough novel with the international market. My mother had borrowed it from the library and had left it around the house. When I was 15 years old, a very crucial age for this kind of discovery, I was having a bath, as was and is my wont, and decided that I would like some reading material, and picked up my mother's copy, The Handmaid's Tale. And my story with this book is that I went into a hot bath as a 15-year-old girl, read that book, and discovered I was both in a freezing cold bath and an adult because I could not put the book down. The thing about The Handmaid's Tale is that as a novel which is about a very political novel about the experience of women, in under oppression and in the conditions of, you know, female oppression, it's also written as a page-turning thriller. And it's one of those books that once you start it, you are in it, you are committed to it, and you just must keep progressing.
So it is a dystopian novel, like you said, written in the mid-80s. What sort of themes crop up?
The basic story is that it's told from the first-person perspective of the protagonist, who's a woman who we only know as Ofrid, because she has been given by a new Christian fundamentalist state, formerly known as the United States of America. By the time of the novel, it's called the Republic of Gilead. And she's given to a commander whose name is presumed to be Fred. And the reason why she's given to him is because in the dystopia of the book, climate change has happened, environmental disasters and nuclear leaks have created an enormous problem with sustainability and fertility in the planet. The new far-right fundamentalist Christian government of the Republic of Gilead decides that there are women who don't have moral standing in their new squeaky clean republic, and Ofrid is one of them because she has been married to a man who's been married before and she has a child, that man. But because she's still in reproductive health, she is assigned as a handmaid or a handmaiden to the household of this commander. So it's a book that looks at the way that the female body is transacted in society. And even though the Republic of Gilead has become a totalitarian community, it appears that the state has taken control of commerce. It's a very unfree society. Women's bodies are still transacted as a means of men displaying their power. And the commander, of course, has a wife who's, you know, the pinnacle of his internal household. And Ofrid is a demonstration of his status because he's considered worthy enough to inseminate and breed with her. It's very dark because it posits the most horrific social circumstances for women to live in, and because she's taken, you know, she's taken the United States and certain tenets that were very much part of the political discourse in the United States in the late 70s and early 1980s to sort of create this world. For Westerners, it's a very dark and penetrating novel of what it means to be a free woman or a liberated woman in the West, and just how tenuous our notion of freedom and liberation really is.
Now, these are all very adult themes and adult ideas that perhaps over many years since reading the book have come to you. But as a 15-year-old, what was it, do you think, that appealed to you about the book and that kept you in the bath and that made you step out of the bath as a woman as opposed to a girl?
Well, I think that you don't need to be 15. In fact, you can be much, much younger to understand that things are different for girls than they are for boys in the society we live in. And that certainly by the age of 15, I was very aware, you know, having gone through puberty and going through it at that time, that my body all of a sudden had a very different social role and had a different social meaning. And I think that's one of the things that Atwood observes very brilliantly in the book, is that as a woman, the politicisation of your body is something that you don't actually have a lot of control over. And I've written about this in articles I've done for various publications about how I went through puberty quite young and had a very sort of developed adult seeming body when I was still effectively psychologically a child. And I had this horrible period in my life where I was aware of how I was being sexualized by adults, even though as a person who knew they were a child, knew that that was inappropriate and not acceptable. And the fact that, you know, I would find myself in situations where adults felt very confident to make sexualized comments about my body because I had large breasts and, you know, was this very, you know, like I said, adult looking young person. And so at the time I read the book, because this is the thing that happens to women in the book, is that they're defined entirely by their reproductive capacity, like what their body's capable of doing, which is, you know, to reproduce and facilitate the creation of life, is something that gets politicized to the point where they lose their social agency entirely. And everyone makes a decision, like in this society, makes a decision about what women can and can't do entirely based on how their body functions. And even as a 15-year-old, I understood that as a very pertinent observation to every woman's situation across the world, that we still overwhelmingly live in patriarchal societies that determine our value based on what our bodies can do and what our bodies can do in relation to men. And for that reason, like, the book is extremely powerful because it connects to that experience that every woman has, even if not every woman can necessarily articulate it.
How has this piece of work, The Handmaid's Tale, continued to influence you as a writer over the years?
Well, you know, if you're not a feminist by the time you finish reading the book, you really don't like women very much. It's quite an empathetic read.
Yeah.
It is. It's a real primer in feminism. It's like, well, this is why feminism exists, because these are the situations that have to be voided and fought, and these tendencies to restrict and oppress women, to cut off their freedom, to control their agency, for a society to seize control of the individual female body. Like, this is what we must fight in order to be free. Certainly over the course of my life, since reading it at 15, I have again and again come back to the book, because socially and societally, the themes that it explores can be observed. And recently, because I'm a columnist for The Guardian, and I was asked to write a piece about when Julie Bishop disavowed feminism recently, and, you know, have at the time the only woman in the cabinet, the woman with the most political power in Australia, saying that she wasn't a feminist and didn't identify, you know, with the politicisation of the liberation of all women. I thought of The Handmaid's Tale and the character of Serena Joy. Serena Joy is like this Tammy Faye Baker type character who's married to the commander. And she's an extraordinary creation of Margaret Atwood, because she has been politically powerful and made herself famous on the back of anti-feminist rhetoric and saying that women's place is in the home and women shouldn't be in public life and, you know, feminists are the worst things imaginable and, you know, that kind of sentiment. But of course, what's happened by the time the story takes place is that Serena Joy has got everything she campaigned for, and she's effectively a prisoner of her own values, trapped in this house, married to a man, forced to watch her husband have sex with a handmaiden, like, and this
while she holds the handmaiden's hand.
And the description of sex with a handmaiden is one of the most chilling and revolting, the most non-erotic writing about sex that I think is possible. It is basically body horror, like, it's a state-sanctioned rape in a household. And you can hear, you know, what happens to my voice when I even think about this visceral, horrible scene of the wife holding the hands of the woman her husband is having political sex with. It's just horrible. But the character of Serena Joy is such an interesting one, because she is, well, what do right-wing women want? Like, what is the end game? So I referred to Serena Joy in this article going, well, you know, Julie Bishop seems to be in the middle. Like, is she with the feminist movement and arguing for liberation? And if she isn't, well, what's she supporting? What's the alternative? You know, she's not Serena Joy, but aren't the Serena Joys on her side? Like, once you start, you know, alienating women from the feminist movement, like, what do you end up with? with logically, structurally, and in all other ways, what results? And what results is a loss of freedom. What results if you don't structurally challenge power that invests more in men than in women, i.e., you know, what we've seen in Australia over the past few months, and we see that, you know, and across parties and across the spectrum, we see that again and again, the way that women get marginalised, the way Julia Gillard was marginalised, the way that Peter Credlin is currently being marginalised, you know, the structures of power are ones that are based in traditions that give men everything, give women very little, and we fought a very, very bloody and determined battle to claim our freedom and our right to agency and our right to, you know, political expression and participation. So what does it mean to disassociate yourself from those campaigns and from that language and from that awareness and that political challenge and that sentiment? Well, ultimately, it results in being trapped in a house with, you know, the echoes of your own rhetoric. And that's one of many things in The Handmaid's Tale. And over the course of you know, my life as an adult, as an adult woman, again and again, you know, characters, situations, the way that the propaganda that the characters in the book are exposed to, you know, these marvellous little aphorisms that Margaret Atwood inserts into the prose, you hear it again and again and you realise that it's not only a great novel, but it's a fable to instruct all women about the tenuous nature of our liberation.
Van Badham, thank you so much for sharing The Handmaid's Tale with us.
Thank you. I love talking about it. It's never a challenge to talk about something you truly love.
Playwright Van Badham. Late Night Story is at the Eyre's House Museum from mid-Feb as part of the Adelaide Fringe Festival. You can also find Van as a columnist in The Guardian.